Hello neighbors, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. Today we talk about one region's journey from food self-reliance to food dependency, and now its slow path back to self-reliance. The region is Labrador, a place that is part of our province and yet which always feels very different from the island portion. And what better place to talk about control over land and its resources than in Labrador? It is a place where we are acutely aware of the importance of sovereignty, whether it be over land or food, to the future of communities. Of course, these are concerns shared with many farmers in general across the province and beyond.
Land is alive, water is alive, the sun is alive. We are just a part of all of that. Generally speaking, most people in Labrador were self-sufficient when it came to food. And they also had their own unique spiritual practices around collecting food, harvesting food, and those sorts of things. It's not that you can kill a moose that makes you a Cree. It's how you treat the moose when you kill it that makes you a Cree. Because there's also a huge movement, especially in Labrador, that you don't come in and do what you want here. You got to come in and assist on what's already going on.
Today I'm speaking with the chair of the Community Food Hub in Happy Valley Goose Bay. Clearly, food security and sovereignty are not simply abstract concepts, but they have a practical relevance. They are made concrete in programs and policies and initiatives. We meet in his office at the Labrador Institute in Happy Valley Goose Bay, just as the summer of 2018 was turning into the fall. Pull up a chair. Join us.
My name is Jamie Jackman, and I'm currently the chairperson for the Community Food Hub here in Happy Valley Goose Bay. We try our best to kind of keep our vision all of Labrador, but at this point in time, we try to focus in the Upper Lake Melville area. But the Food Hub is kind of basically committed to, at a grassroots community level, trying to tackle the issues of what's plaguing Labrador in terms of food security and food education, and just trying to get the discussion going about those issues.
What's sort of the history of food here in central Labrador and then coastal Labrador?
Sure, well, I'll speak to Labrador in a general sense, because it's diverse, and it's got diverse people, and the different areas were very different. But generally speaking, most people in Labrador were self-sufficient when it came to food. And it's not, it's hunting practices in terms of also gardening, agricultural, and that sort of thing. And they also had their own unique spiritual practices around collecting food, harvesting food, and those sorts of things. Food was just like anywhere, I guess. It was kind of the central focus of day-to-day life, was to kind of harvest and to do that. But over time, you know, those things with settlement and colonialism and, you know, all the things that go along with that, people have kind of settled more into communities and have become reliant on the grocery stores. And it's not even that far back, you know. It's my grandfather would have been in the early part of the last century, you know, hunting his own food. He was a trapper. He was had a trap line. My grandmother stayed home and she cooked and she tended a garden and that sort of thing. And they were sovereign in their food practices. They weren't reliant on anyone. Sure, later on in their lives they moved to Hopedale and they became more settled and that sort of thing. But Labrador is a place that can be self-reliant when it comes to food, and it has been. And it's just really, in the grand scheme of things, we've just been a blip of time. We're now reliant on something, and we need to kind of start thinking about this seriously again. And I think there is a big rediscovery. Speaking to just Happy Valley Goose Bay, there's a lot more talk of people wanting to do their own gardens, and there's a community market, and, you know, there's a lot more homesteading interest here, which is really positive. And I like the idea of starting with history here a little bit, because it means that this is not something we're new to. It's something we have to reclaim and have to reconnect.
So you're really probably was one or two generations removed from food sovereignty.
Yeah, I would say that's right. Yeah, and it's kind of funny, just kind of still trying to introduce myself here and why you would be speaking to me about food security. It's always been something that's kind of, I still consider myself new to this whole campaign, is to trying to get people to think about where their food comes from and their role in that. But I married a woman whose mother and father were farmers here. whose mother and father were also farmers in the United States. Mm-hmm. I worked at the Labrador Friendship Center, where I was the coordinator for the food bank in the town for 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. It's something that's kind of followed me, so I'm starting to think that maybe that's,
it's selecting me,
yeah. So, but it's very holistic in nature. Like, everybody plays a role in this, and everybody can contribute, right? Yeah. From very, very grassroots level to very, very grass tops level, you know, in terms of government and policy, academics, all these things. So when I left the Labrador Friendship Center and started to work with the Labrador Institute of Memorial University, last thing I thought I would be doing would be work still with food security. Yeah. But here we are, you know, and our director, Ashley, she said that it's a great thing for me to stay with the community food hub. I asked her if it would be something that she'd want me to step away from. She said, nope, we play a role in this too, and it's important that you stay there. So here I am. Yeah.
In terms of history, when did the food hub, the community food hub here start?
That's kind of where I'm a little bit blurry, and I think a lot of people are, because there were a lot of different organizations that were involved in it. Yeah. But eventually, I think it became incorporated in 2011. So it became its own incorporated body in 2011. The Food Hub is a collection of different organizations. The Labrador Institute, the Labrador Friendship Center was involved. The Department of Agriculture is involved. Mm-hmm. Also, we have a coordinator. But all of us are people who have a genuine interest in food security, or we're garden enthusiasts, or people that just are fascinated with this and want to try to help spread the word about it. Yeah.
Since you had a sort of an organic process, different organizations coming together to do it, some of them would be involved in developing backyard gardens, community gardens, some more policy related. Is there a range of activity?
I would say we want to get to have more of a range and to be more of a policy influencer, advocate, but I think right now our role is kind of to be partners with those organizations that are more like forcing that issue. We like to focus more on the ground. So, for example, an initiative that we work a lot with the Mennonite Central Committee, which is a faith-based organization, but they're very much for grassroots initiatives. Mm-hmm. They come into communities and they help people help themselves and build capacity and stuff. So we get a lot of support from them. And one of the cool things we're doing now is we're building raised beds, raised garden beds at the supportive living units for Nanatsiavut. So we have Edwin Mesher, who's our coordinator. He's been working the summer to get that on the go. And he's, and I know he's installed a few. We're trying to get people to take ownership in that and to just see firsthand that you can grow your own food and contribute to where you're living, even in a small way, and all the good things that come from that. A lot of people who live in supportive living units may need a way to show compassion, a way to nurture and care for things, and gardening is that. So you can see that we're trying to tackle issues from a grassroots level. So really that filters up. There's a lot of general, broad issues that face indigenous people that can be tackled by starting with the people with their hands in the dirt. I like that vision, and I think that's why I keep gravitating towards the community food hub. We also do things like we have a community garden. So we have a community garden over here, not too far from where we are right now. The Mesher Garden, we call it, and some of the people that live around this garden keep a watch on it. They benefit, obviously, from the food that grows there. So trying to create a sense of community around that. I think that's one of the things we do well. Another thing that we do is we have a good food bag, which is $25 worth of produce that we sell for $10 to people who may need a hand up more so than a handout. So we, for lack of a better word, we say the working poor, the people who work 40 hours a week but still just need a, and can afford to pay some but just need a little hand up. So that's another thing that's been going. Another thing around the education piece is that Shelly Cleary, who's also on the Community Food Hub, she goes into grade 4 classes every year in the spring, and she plants seeds with them, or starts seedlings. Then in June we go out and plant them in our children's garden, and then in the fall when they're in grade 5 we go harvest those and make soup or make chili or whatever from it. We've also experimented with community food kitchens, like where we would teach people how to cook, because that's a huge part of it. Yeah. We've talked about maybe learning preserving and that sort of thing. So we're trying to tackle all those issues so that people can do it for themselves.
Is there a song that I can fold under this? Favorite song of yours? Something that relates to Labrador? Or
actually, I play in a band. Why don't you take one of my songs and do that?
What's the name of the band?
Silver Wolf Band.
Well, I saw you at the folk festival.
Did you? Well,
that's right.
See, I do a lot of things.
It didn't even strike me that I knew you. You were up on stage.
Yeah, that's right. I'm singing and playing.
Yeah. Which which one of your songs do you want?
Oh, jeez, I don't know.
Because you just came up with a
yes.
CD.
The first one is called A Thousand Years.
Yes.
And it talks about the river, basically. Yeah. And one of the lines in there is, I used to speak to the river in words I'd understand. Then I'd kill my dinner and eat it with my hands. So maybe that might be something you could do. But anyways, it's about the river and people's connection to it.
I used to play on the river, like moonlight on the lops, like an elder speaking, the spirit never stops. So ancient, patiently moving like the breeze, drinking the water that's reflected the leaves for a thousand years, for a thousand years. I used to speak to the river I'd understand. Then I'd kill my dinner and I'd eat it with my hands. Was so endless, relentless, was so restless and free. Respect for the water that's been so good to me for a thousand years. Somewhere to be. I'm a seal in the springtime, caught on a flow. Don't know where I'm going, just happy to go. Like the geese in the fall, you've somewhere to be. I'm a seal in the springtime, caught on a flow. Don't know where I'm going, just happy to go.
That's the Silver Wolf Band with A Thousand Years. And it's true, I saw this band at the 2018 Newfoundland Labrador Folk Festival, and I didn't recognize my guest, the lead singer and guitarist, Jamie Jackman. I guess I didn't read the program. And he was wearing sunglasses, and he was in rock star mode. We start off this section by talking about how access to local food can change people's relationship with food in general.
As you've watched people get involved in community gardens and so on, have you seen their awareness of food change their relationship to food?
I like to think so. I really do. And a huge flagship of the community food hub that I think is the community outdoor market, which happens. We try to have it run all summer into the fall, and we bring people there. Our emphasis is everything, as long as it's locally made and produced, it can be sold there. And I think a lot of people, this summer, for example, we weren't able to get it on the go until the middle of August, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. There just wasn't enough interest from vendors at that time. I don't know why, but we were just kind of slow getting it on the go. But we had a lot of emails saying, you know, what's going on? When is the market? We really missed the market. We hope it's going to start again. And you say, no, don't worry. It's going to happen. We just got to get going. Because I think the community is starting to see that we do produce food here. And people really do see the value in that. I mean, just for myself, since I've been on the Community Food Hub and working in food security, like a lot of the discussion around our dinner table now is about where our food comes from. Yeah. We had a salad there not too long ago with kale and strawberries from my mother-in-law's garden. But the salad also had blueberries. So we were talking to my daughter, who's six, about where it all comes from. And I picked up the blueberry container and said, these things here come from grandma's garden, and these blueberries are from British Columbia, you know? So these kind of conversations are what's changing what people think. And I do believe that Goose Bay is becoming more aware of where its food comes from because of these initiatives that are happening. The community outdoor food market is a big thing that happens that always gives us a platform and gives us a place to kind of start these conversations and put that in people's minds.
You realize in the whole province there's this big move to increase the number of new entrants in agriculture or increase food self-sufficiency. It strikes me sometimes that we have focused on commercial agriculture there instead of also realizing that self-provisioning, which was a part of our history, as you mentioned there. Do you feel like the things that you are doing here are valued within this whole larger move toward more food self-sufficiency?
I think it is valued. I really do. And I can give you an example with what's going on with the Labrador Institute and Memorial University in Grenfell when we want to establish this PIE Center for Northern Boreal Food Systems. In order for something like this to work, we need a community organization that is on the ground, that works with nonprofits, that works with government departments, all just the same, to kind of make this worthwhile so that we're not disconnected from the community. We actually have an ear to the ground with the community. And that's where I think in my role here as well at the Labrador Institute and the Community Food Hub, it's kind of a liaison sort of thing with the community because I've worked so much with the community on these issues. So I think it's valuable. And whether people see it as valuable, eventually they will, because there's also a huge movement, especially in Labrador, that you don't come in and do what you want here. You got to come in and assist on what's already going on. Mm-hmm. Because for so long, the North has always had people come tell us what to do, come tell us what we should be doing, and you know, things will be better if you do this. But with grassroots community organizations like this, they're going to see that it's important. Because we already have a lot of the groundwork laid, and when people come here and talk now about food security and food sovereignty, that's not going to be a foreign language. It's good. People already know what that is, and you know, words like homesteading, they know what this is, and being self-sufficient with our food and that sort of thing. We've always known that we're a giant landmass that's full of isolated communities, and we have our own issues, and now we're starting to kind of sort them out for ourselves. We have a short growing season, sure, but we've been able to do it for thousands of years, so we'll get back to that point.
I'm wondering also, what are some of the kind of unique aspects of Labrador compared to other parts of Atlantic Canada or Quebec or whatever, in terms of growing? What are some challenges that you deal with here that might not be the case in some other areas?
Most of the communities in Labrador are only accessible through flying during the most, you know, 10 months of winter. And then the boat is a lot of times it's not as reliable and it's very much shorter. So I mean, our cost of food when it comes to just transportation alone is inflated. You could talk about soil in Goose Bay, you know, but I almost feel like that can be amended, that can be changed. So for us, more so it's about policy and about distribution. I know those aren't sexy words anymore, everybody's heard them a million times, and it kind of feels like, but it's the truth. You know, the reason our food costs so much is because of the transportation. The reason our food supply here is so limited is because of the time it takes and the distance we are from major production. Anywhere else in Canada, or maybe even on the island, you know, fresh fruit is not always far away. Now, as a whole, even as a province, I understand 2 to 3 days and we're basically, our shelves are empty if our supply chains are cut. Labrador, it's just amplified more so because you have to fly that food in on a Twin Otter or something. That's, you know, that's expensive. It's very expensive. But also, those are reasons why Labrador needs its own food production more than anywhere else too, because we can. We just need to educate, we need to shine a light on Labrador and say, you know what, we can do it, and once our production issues are fixed, then, you know, we're closer to home. I mean, if we've got to ship it from Goose Bay to Hopedale, it's not as bad as from British Columbia to Goose Bay.
Right. Are there food hubs in other parts of Labrador?
Not that I'm aware of. About a year or two ago, we discussed the possibility of looking up north to see if there was any places up north that we could go to and say, hey, if we could start a food hub here, we could kind of link and we could help support each other that way. So that may be something we do in the future. I guarantee you there's probably places that deal with this. They just whether they've reached out or connected, or if they have the same name,
a different name.
I say there's a lot of organizations in this part of the province that are dealing with this.
I often ask, you know, since we're really trying to increase agriculture, if you have a suggestion, if you were asked by the premier some policies. But your comment about in the north, so often people from outside come in and say things, mm-hmm. it makes me sort of try to moderate that question mm-hmm. somehow. Are there ways we can get out of the way of community self-resilience? Some policies we could change to make it easier for what's already happening here, but are there things that hold you back?
Oh, of course. I mean, I talk to farmers a lot, and if we just want to talk about farmers, you know, policy issues are a major drawback there. Land is getting easier to get, but still it's not their land. Yeah. It's kind of leased agricultural land. It doesn't make people want to pick up and farm. It makes people not want to build a legacy, build something that's you can hand down to your children. So if I were talking to the premier if there was really wanted to know, I would say, you have to change that. You have to make it so that the land is theirs. Provide a sense of ownership. That's what it's all about, I think, ownership and being responsible, because a sense of reliance or dependence has been created, like a culture of dependence has been created when it comes to, if your land is not yours, it's tough. So policy is where it's at. Our food security is in crisis here in a lot of places. On the North Coast, there were studies done that some communities are up to 87%, I believe, food insecure families. That's shocking and alarming. And I know we're one province, but sometimes I think that can hinder us. It's going to be slow to translate or to map onto Labrador if we're only focusing province-wide. So that's one thing. I also think that continuing to support Indigenous organizations in their own management of harvesting their own animals for Indigenous hunting rights and practices should be respected. Because that's about sovereignty then, right? A big part of the definition of food security is to have access to food, healthy food, and it needs to be affordable. Yeah. But also it has to be in a way that's culturally appropriate, because I went up to Whitehorse not too long ago to talk with some people there, but actually it's right here in front of us, the National Indigenous Economic Development Board. We had a round table to talk about northern sustainable food systems, and one of the cool quotes that I saw come out here, and I thought if I were to be defining or giving an example as to what the difference is between food security and food sovereignty, it's this: it's not that you can kill a moose that makes you a Cree, it's how you treat the moose when you kill it that makes you a Cree. So if you think about food sovereignty, it's about reclaiming and doing things how you do them, right? So when you talk about how we can get out of our own way sometimes, it's to allow this to happen, but that needs to be supported. The government does play a role, but it needs to be a supporting role instead of a we need to do this by March 31st, and here's the plan.
Let me paint you a picture of a wild land, sewn together by the grace of a weathered hand. So cast off, signed off, I'm not ready to leave. Like the fading memories of the old man, me for a thousand years.
That is the Silver Wolf Band's A Thousand Years, a song about the river that gives life to the region in Labrador where they're from, as requested by my guest today, the chair of the Community Food Hub in Happy Valley Goose Bay, Jamie Jackman. Back to our conversation on a late morning in late summer as our stomachs begin to rumble.
It's interesting that land does come up a lot across the whole province, but especially here. And it strikes me that the government should be much more sensitive to the importance of land, to a sense of connection and ownership and so on, given the land claims that have gone on here in this region, and that they could see an almost similar thing with people who farm who are trying to grow things, is they might have that same need to connect to the land.
Land, and this is an indigenous concept in a way, is land is alive, water is alive, the sun is alive. We are just a part of all of that. So that relationship is real. And what that's the cool thing about farming is it's almost like a convert in a way, right? It's like, okay, it's a farmer. Farmers understand the land like you wouldn't believe. I don't claim to be a farmer and I don't claim to be that thing. I think I can stand back and see the importance of this, and I hope that I can play a role in, to try to bring this back, to kind of get people's attention again towards food security and the relationship that we're supposed to have with the land. Because our ability to solve this problem is here. We just need the land and we need to develop, reconnect with it and re-spark that relationship with it.
Growing food is also about growing community, and it seems like the Food Hub is all about that. It's not just feeding people, but it's meeting some of their other needs as well. Do you see people are looking at food in different ways now than they are? They are understanding it more holistically?
I hope so. I think there are more people doing this, and I mean, I'm still learning this as well, but I mean, when I went up to Whitehorse to talk about with the National Indigenous Economic Development Board, what we kind of came away with, and we all as a group of people who are interested in this from one end of the country to the other, indigenous, non-indigenous, we had people who were literally were either in Inuvik with a greenhouse, community greenhouse, and then the head people at Northwest Company, who are own the stores, you know, North Mart and those places. But what we kind of came away with was, you know, how is northern food systems supposed to tie into economic development? Because they advise the government as to these sorts of things. But I think what we kind of said was, you know what, without food security, food sovereignty, there really is not going to be economic development. Because without safe, affordable, culturally appropriate food, people don't develop into a strong workforce. Yeah. Let's just say that. Because if you want a stronger workforce, and all the governments will say, you know, jobs are the ones, are the things that spur economic development, and they're the ones that kind of push that whole machine. And if you want to look at it holistically, then if there is no food security, there's no economic development, because I can't go to send my kids to school hungry and expect them to compete with somebody who has food security. Yeah. Food is expensive, so if a kid has family supplemented by the food bank, they're not on the same playing field, let's say. Yeah. They don't have the same advantage, they don't have the same chances of succeeding, which means going into better education, jobs, and this, because we have to keep those are such a basic level of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Let's just say that. So yeah, if you want to be holistic about it, there's no economic development without food security, proper food security. Yeah. It'll stay flat. I think that that would be a good example if somebody's still skeptical as to what role food security really plays in all the big picture.
Production of food is one of the few economic generators in rural communities.
That's right, absolutely. Yeah. And on a national scale, you could even say, like, farming is so unbelievably important, but it's so unbelievably undervalued too, you know? For some reason, I don't know why.
What's your favorite local food?
Baked apples.
Baked apples?
Baked apples are the best. Baked apples and char. I can get smoked char, man. That's the best thing. And pitsik. My cousin Brian smokes his own fish and dries his own fish. Yeah. Pitsik is like salmon or trout, doesn't it? But it's dried and it's almost like candy. It's dehydrated. It's like jerky almost, but fish, but it's absolutely just brilliant. He's up in Hopedale. He smokes and dries his fish in Ablatuk Bay, which is where my family's from. And just the best fish in the world. You know what? I'll tell you something. I count calories. I've been trying to, you know, be a little healthier. But when I eat country food, I don't count them. Because, you know, there's something else about it. And then you talk about connection to the land, and you talk about what food is, and food being more than just something you go to the store and buy. There's more of a spiritual connection with country food when you have an indigenous background. And so when I have that, my mom comes home from her annual trip up there, and I'm eating pitsik or eating baked apples with blueberries or whatever she brings home, those calories don't count.
Thanks so much, Jim.
Man, I appreciate you coming in to talk to me. It's good. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Food is complicated. There are many people and interests involved in getting it on our plates. One needs a holistic view. As Jamie suggested, a region cannot really have meaningful development without control over land, including control over the provision of one's own food. Without that, there is no real independence or ability to act freely. We need to learn that as a whole province.
So for so long, the North has always had people come tell us what to do, come tell us what we should be doing, and, you know, things will be better if you do this. Support Indigenous organizations in their own management of harvesting their own animals. Mm-hmm. Indigenous hunting rights and practices should be respected. Without food security, food sovereignty, there really is not going to be economic development. Farming is so unbelievably important, but it's so unbelievably undervalued you know?
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of this show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The song for today's show was A Thousand Years by the Silver Wolf Band from Labrador. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by the late British guitarist Bert Jansch. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
I count calories, but when I eat country food, I don't count them.